When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Oh, broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack, and welcome to another interview here on the podcast feed. What built the podcast feed? It's not all Sizzler and 7-Eleven talk. It's talking with people who I know, who I find fascinating, interesting, and think they have stories to tell, whether they think they do or not. Getting to my guest here shortly, but before we do that, I am excited to announce officially, this is a bit of a pre-taped episode, so I'm releasing this later. We'll see what happens by then. I'm a little scared and nervous, but I can officially announce, it has been announced, my book, Why We Love Star Wars, The Greatest Moments That Built a Galaxy Far, Far Away, is available wherever you can get your books online at other spots. I have more information on that later when I actually know. But you can get it on Amazon. Just type my name and find Why We Love Star Wars. Coming out May 15th, available for pre-order now. Oh, that's exciting. That's nerve-wracking. We'll talk about that another time because I got a guest here. You might have, well, she's written a ton of things. She's a writer, but she's also a musician. She could play bass. She's a Beatles fan. She's done a lot of things. And if you're a nerd, you've probably seen some of the stuff she's done, including Justice League action and my favorite thing of her catalog, Forces of Destiny, Star Wars Forces of Destiny for Lucasfilm. Please welcome Jennifer Murrow.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fabulous. I'm just grooving to this music, man. I'm like, who wrote this?
This is generic, licensed, nondescript music.
Oh, so it's like, you know, it's a radio friendly.
I buy the rights. It's become, it replaced my original theme song, which a friend of mine in Texas wrote.
Oh.
Though I use that on Patreon, but
yeah,
it's
groovy, man.
It's got a groove.
I'm just like,
rock and roll. It's like, it feels like it's got a rock and roll vibe. Jen Murrow.
Hello.
I'm so happy to do this because, I knew your name first before I knew you, and then I got to interview you on Collider Jedi Council.
That was fun.
But the same week, my good friend and frequent Knapsack Files guest, Matthew Ryan Key, was like, hey, do you know who Jennifer Murrow is? And I said, Forces of Destiny person? He's like, yeah. Hey, we're gonna create some stuff together. So there's some other whole thing we'll talk about some of the time.
Oh yeah, that's fun stuff too.
And so over then, I think I can say now you've become a friend.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's been what, 2 years?
Since Forces of Destiny. Yeah, yeah.
April. So right now,
2017. Wow.
Is this about April 15th?
Yes, it's roughly around that time.
So literally today,
in this pre-taped episode that Ken does not know when he's going to release later.
Approximately April 17th.
Or so.
Of 2017.
Yes.
2017. So it was April 15th, 2017,
yep.
I think, that weekend.
And it was announced at Celebration.
It was announced at Celebration, yeah. And I think it was, yeah, and I had met, that's when I met all the gang and Janina Gavankar and Sam Witwer. I had met Sam a couple of months earlier at a Rebels dinner with everybody.
A Rebels dinner?
Yeah, so it was like, Dee Brad and Tia
the whole team
and Vanessa Marshall and she's
great.
Got a whole steak and it was fabulous. And so it was like a steakhouse situation.
You got pulled into the Star Wars family then.
It was. And then I had nerded out on something and you know, Sam's like, who are you? Why are you here? What are you doing? What's going on?
I can hear Sam say that.
And I couldn't talk about it at the time, but yeah. But yeah, and then Kyle Newman and I got to meet Jet and everybody. So now we're like the family. And
Jet is
Matt
as in Jet Lucas, you know,
Jet Lucas,
relation to little bit to do with Star Wars family.
Just a wee bit.
And the whole team, yeah.
Yeah, and so we had the Star Wars family feed.
That's awesome.
Still to this day on Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah.
On Twitter DM.
Once you're in, you're in. And I guess that's a good place to start. But your writing career has gone on. I mean, it's over a decade now that you've been, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably, I've been freelancing since 2005. And during that time, I've done every other job.
I also think the 90s is the last decade. So 2005 feels like 10 years to me.
Oh, I know. it's crazy. 15, no, it is. I don't think I'll ever get used to that. Until it's too late.
Until I'm in the grave.
Pretty much.
Yeah, yes. I don't know what, the 90s, everyone knows my obsession with 90s rock music. It was my radio career, college years. I don't know what it is. I'm still like, last decade, right. 1997.
And we're like, it's almost 2020.
It blows my mind.
No, it's terrifying.
Did you come out here? Where are you from? You're an East Coaster, right?
I'm a New Yorker.
New Yorkers, I'm if you can't tell. You got some Italiano.
Master Pico Italiano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, grown up, I know too many Italians.
Well, there's not a lot of Italians here. I mean, right? My mom's the first one born. I'm the first one born here. My mom came in 1963. So,
okay.
She beat the Beatles by like
she was
6 months.
She was on the same flight.
They came over by boat. How you do it. Yeah.
That's how my family did too.
But in 63, yeah. You think like that the boat days are over.
Think.
But it was more like a ship.
A ship, an actual ship.
It was really cool.
My dad was Ellis Island, 1951.
Oh, so not that much earlier.
Not
okay.
That much.
Yeah.
So you come over.
So, yeah.
You're first generation.
I'm first generation. Right. And, you know, Italian girl, like, you don't leave the family. You don't,
no.
That's not something you do. And so for me saying to go do this is crazy talk.
What part of New York exactly you...
So Long Island, Massapequa. So basically it's like, I think the Baldwins are from there and Jerry Seinfeld was from there and... I think, even like Twisted Sister, like had a house there, something is in the water in Massapequa. I don't know what the heck it is, but a lot of people specifically from Massapequa.
What part of the,
Farmingdale, so it's Nassau County border.
Okay. I got that a little bit.
Yeah. South Shore, more South Shore.
Like I know Bryant Park at Times Square. That's all I know about New York.
Yeah. We have the Long Island Railroad right to Penn. That's all you need to know. We're on that line. And anyone who's listening from there is Massapequa Park, Wantagh. Like they know the line. They, when I meet people, they do the train person. Yeah. So I was like,
I want people to tweet that in a video of you doing that. Tweet it to Jen and I after this episode. You are a nerd. You're a nerd.
I've
been to your house for a party and I walked in and was like, that's the best nerd cave I've seen ever. And by cave, I mean the entire house. Did that begin over there in Long Island? When did it set in? When did you know I have a problem?
Man, I should have probably brought some photos because it started with my room was entirely Beatles. But before that, my room was entirely
we're going to do a lot of minutes on that.
Oh, okay. Well, we had, it was all the team, but Michael J. Fox and Will Wheaton was on my wall, which was so great. And now I'm friends with Will.
Now you're friends with Will, yeah.
It's really weird. And all of that. And then, but I loved Star Trek The Next Generation back then. So that was a thing.
That's a thing.
And then that switched to all the Beatles and then playing D&D in senior year of high school. And then, there was no turning back. And then, by the way, I played Dungeon when I was 7. My dad bought the dungeon game? Do you remember that dungeon game?
I kind of remember that.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. You're not a D&D person too much.
Well, I'm not because I wasn't allowed to as a kid because...
It was evil?
Evil and devils and demons, so I wasn't allowed to.
So hashtag evil. Got
it. Yes. Okay. So even later, my only time I've ever played D&D, Matt Mercer did DM the game at Matt Key's house. I feel like I've been blessed.
Oh, yeah.
But I was still don't tell my mom. And I was
still
38.
Yeah. Hey, that stuff doesn't go away. But so... After that, it was, and by the way, I mean, the reason I'm here is Spielberg and Goonies and Last Jedi probably more than anything else and Back to the Future.
Wait, The Last Jedi or The Last Emperor? You said Last Jedi.
Oh, The Return of the Jedi. Jesus. See, this is how much I was been ingrained with the last episodes I did of Forces of Destiny. Everything was Last Jedi, Last Jedi, Last Jedi.
No, I get it. I mean, look, and that's, one of my favorites too.
I'm not that young. But I know I look great. But
you
I'm not
look
that
spectacular.
Young.
But okay, that makes sense. But Last Emperor got you into nerddom. Okay, interesting choice there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
And all of those. And then Jurassic Park happened, and that was the end of that. I was like, okay, I have to come to California. And I made it happen. I went to USC, and I got here, and I stayed, and I don't know how, by luck and by a lot of help from people and tears and struggling, and you just do it.
You're a Trojan.
Yeah.
Was it writing early on? Because I didn't, you know, upon first meeting you, just meeting you through the writing worlds and Star Wars and this and that. And then eventually it's revealed, oh, Jen can lay down some bass licks on that bass guitar.
Yeah, and I was in an all-female rock band in New York. I went back to New York for like maybe a year.
Okay.
Before I came back here again. And I originally came, I wanted to do film scoring. John Williams was my life. That's why I went to USC. I wanted to do that.
Okay, so that's mean. So it isn't necessarily writing. It's film scoring.
No, it was just, film and music. And but this was a long time ago. I'm not going to say what year, but but like back then you didn't, I think it was very early Pro Tools. I was on jazz drives. Anyone who's old enough knows what that
is. Yes, yes, yes.
So, and you just, it's a very prestigious school and it's something that you need to have. Mm-hmm. The chops for that. And I always just kind of played on the cuff. I think now would be a very different situation. And
yeah.
You can, everything's, digital.
Digitalized,
I could do it. To pick that up now would be exhausting. But but that's why I did that. And then so I went back to New York in band for a year. And that was September 11th times New York. So that did not
different,
work out.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, and I'm not the best freaking bass player, by the way. I mean, piano and guitar are my first two instruments, and bass is but I'm a lefty bass player because of Paul McCartney.
Sure.
I started when I was 15. Well, I started playing piano when I was 6.
Usually that hits young. Piano is not something people just, I got to pick up at 50.
But I still can't read to this day. Like I would cheat because my teacher would play it once and then I'd know it. I'm one of those people.
Well, but yes, so is Sir Paul McCartney. He didn't read music. Okay. He just tinkled. Scrambled eggs. Yeah. That's how we did it.
I love your legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I did not realize that. I probably knew that.
He may now, but then he
I'm sure he knows now.
Yeah.
Because
that's why he was worried about Let It Be. He woke up with a dream and he was like, this had to have been written already. Right. I mean, so he doesn't know the music. So you're like Paul McCartney.
Great. I'm fine with that. I'm totally okay with that. And I'm naturally a lefty. It just kind of happened. But I do love bass. Drums, I just can't do. I always wish I could do drums, and it's tough. So bass, But yeah, I miss it. And I'm meeting friends now who also play things. And Veronica Baker, who's a friend of mine, and she plays drums.
See?
So I'm like, we should probably get the band back together. It would be fun. It would be super fun to do something here. Like just a jam or for a charity or just a bunch of nerd girls doing that.
Well, you get the, I know you've been to a couple of shows and my friend Roger Craig Smith has invited me to some. I can't get out to them. There's a group of the female VO artists have a band, right?
Oh, Slaughter?
Is that what I'm...
It's not... I mean, it's Kari Wahlgren.
Okay.
Kari started this tribute band to Slaughter.
That's what I...
Slaughter.
Yeah.
And they are fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's... They don't play. I mean, Kari knows how to play bass. And Mary Elizabeth McGlynn is one of the voices. Sarah Cravens is another. They're the three who are singing. Okay. And then there's a band. And it's just super fun. And they do takes on it, but... Like amazing arrangements, like a jazz one and like a choir.
That's awesome.
And it's crazy. So it's not a permanent thing. It's more like a once in a while.
Well, then my point is you can have a permanent one.
Yes, I can absolutely do that.
This is fascinating. You hear John Williams music, you're listening to the Ewok March and Return of the Jedi and Goodies, and you're like, well, I want to do that. And all right, you go back and you play, but writing is now you're known for what you're doing, among other things.
Yeah.
But that's your bread and butter.
Which is amazing.
How does that switch?
Well, by the way, I always loved it. And here's why. I think the switch happened in my brain along with music was when Goonies came out, there was a magazine. There was a magazine of how things were done. They showed how they did all the practical effects. And I was just fascinated by that. And then I started buying Cinefex and all those. And remember those big, thick.
Absolutely.
And so I was super into ILM and all of that stuff. So there was other parts I loved other than just the music. So I don't think it was that unnatural. I've always created stuff. I like the bigger picture. So I'm definitely a very much a producer at heart.
Yeah.
So that was in me and it was for the best. And then I went into film production at USC. So, I composed my own stuff in my dorm room. Keyboard.
I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. So you got your scores taken care of. But I get you go there for one thing. I get that process there. But what did you feel at the time? Hey, I'm a one stop shop. Or when did you start writing? Like, I want to know that transition.
I wrote a Batman.
Okay.
Like animated series probably spec back in 90, okay. the '90s where I didn't even like, I wasn't even school. Like I didn't even have USC yet. Like what the hell was I thinking? I love
youth for that.
Like ambitious. I did a Dragonlance adaptation, yeah. Dragons of Autumn Twilight. I have a 2-hour movie still that I had no business adapting this screenplay. I still have it and I did it and it took a year and so that's like the kind of thing you do when you're an idiot and.
Yeah, but that's also right. Would you look at 18? I applied to be a part of Letterman's writing staff, and I did get a very nice try again next decade kid letter. But like, it's part of youth. But
it's youth.
I got to figure that's how you learn too. Because you go to USC, the best of the best of the best.
Yeah,
but you're already picking up those skills along the way.
I was trying to create cartoons even back then.
Was it always cartoons?
No,
animated. We should say.
Fell into it sort of because I fell into animation. Yes, like live action was the thing I was going to do and wanted to do.
Yeah, okay.
But also, by the way, I mean the '90s animated stuff was amazing and a huge part of my life.
Big stuff, yeah.
Batman but even like Freakazoid, Animaniacs, and X-Men was amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But like even the comedy stuff was like all the Warner Brothers stuff was amazing.
Rocko's Modern Life is one that I used to watch all the time on Nickelodeon,
which was crazy. So sort of happened.
That's so weird. Your whole life defined by something that just sort of happened.
Sort of happened. Yeah, I was on
your whole life, your whole career, we should say.
Well, I was a PA in the Nick Cannon show at Nick on Sunset.
Okay,
and. Maybe a couple months in, they got canceled.
Yeah.
So they needed help in the Burbank. There was a job offer in the Burbank.
Yeah.
You know, studio, and that's animation. But I didn't know how separate live action and animation was back then, and it really, really is. And so that's how I fell into it because then I started doing development and finding stuff, and I love that stuff, and I'm still doing that to this day. I'm one of those, oh my God, that's amazing. Why hasn't it been done? Let's do it. Let's produce this. Let me introduce you to people. So I have that already naturally in me.
I know. I was gonna sing your praises. I've been in a room with a whiteboard with you while you break down stuff, and I've been writing in various forms and reading books and going to schools about it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that I know you're probably going to say, I picked it up from this person, that person. Doesn't matter. It's all you. And there were things that I was like, oh, that's how you do it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that came from you, from being in a room and seeing what you can do. So it was in you. The force was with you, but it's a long road.
It is.
Development, all that stuff. But when did you write, like, other than the one, the spec script written in your youth, when did you sit down pen to paper or finger to keyboard and start saying, This is it now.
You mean for like for pay?
Well, no, not necessarily for pay, but this transition, at what point for those listening, because we especially have Lapsack Files listeners, a lot of younger listeners, hey, with career aspirations themselves.
Yeah.
You're doing the old PA, this, that, now you're developing. Yes. What point does script writing come into it? What point?
I think I was a development assistant, I was very good at putting Bibles together and creating shows, and I helped on one of the Bibles that in the development, I helped write that. And that was probably my first paid thing. But that was like one of the earliest times or after college that I started. That's how I kind of got into it, is writing Bibles. And then.
And she's not talking about books of the Bible, people.
Right.
Pitch Bibles.
Show pieces. What do they call them?
I think most people know that now. But it's your PowerPoint presentation in one way or another.
But there's another word for it.
Show.
I forget what the heck it is. It's a pitch deck.
Pitch deck. Yeah.
I never say pitch deck. But
Because I don't like that one. That is very middle management accountant business person.
Okay, yeah.
Let's get the deck together to show the our new payroll system. No. Pitch Bible's much
pitch
more
Bible.
Creative and spiritual. That's
what, right. It sounds more, more hippie.
Yeah.
But so that's how I kind of started that. It's just like grab where you can and it's who you know. USC I didn't do great there. I didn't have the best time there. It's an amazing place, but I was a small Italian girl who didn't have the social skills in this big pond. You know, my eighth grade graduating class, I think, was 20 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So like I didn't, the world was very, and I went to like four different high schools and like a lot of Catholic school. And then senior year, I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And my best friend down the block, had went to the public school. It was a very, very good public school, actually. So I was like, and then I went, my senior year was the best year of my life. And that's when I played D&D, and that's when that started. So everything changed because of that senior year.
Specifically D&D or just senior year?
Everything.
You start finding where you belong then.
Finally, where I belonged.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it's
who you know,
because I didn't keep a lot from USC. My first opportunity Nick on Sunset was another guy from Long Island.
Right.
And he was like, I like you, kid. I'm going to give you a chance.
Long Island
and
forever.
I'm like, oh, that was pointless, but awesome. You know,
film school was pointless. That's what I'm saying. I should have met this
and
guy.
And in this day and age, I mean, there's everything at your disposal. We didn't have the internet like we do now. It's amazing what you can do now.
Yeah, and it's funny that I've talked about it before in some way or another, the who you know, because you hear that wherever you grow up, you hear that about Hollywood. That's who you know, kid.
Right.
You want go picture, you're going to get it from who you know. But what that means, because I fail at it too, I think we're similar in this regard. This is why I think I like you. I hit this town from a small town, bigger class, but small town.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a manual. Here's how you. I always go to the Heather Graham joke from Steve Martin movie, Bowfinger.
Oh,
where do I go to be an actor?
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, that's a joke.
Where do I go to be an actor?
But they don't tell you that. And when I landed in 98,
I was 97.
97. Yeah. Like, I'm not pulling, you know, the GeoCities websites of agents are a lot different than they are now. Yep. So I failed to connect with people and get to know people.
Yep.
I just thought you go, you take your classes, someone hands you a golden ticket.
Yep.
I knew there was work involved, but not that night.
Right. But in terms of like, it's not.
And the next thing you know, I am watching three of the four people I hung out with for a time at 30 Rock doing stuff for Lorne Michaels, and I'm not. And it's not on them or me. It's just like, I didn't, not that they would have, it would have happened automatically.
Right.
That's what who you know means.
Yes.
So you're saying you go to USC, the biggest who you know of who you know, and you don't know how to navigate those waters.
If you don't, then those connections don't coalesce, and then you don't utilize why you're here.
Right.
And that's the tough part.
Yeah.
And I learned that the hard way, and it took a long time, and now it took a long time to unlearn a lot of the old, you know, things I was brought up with.
Me too.
And
as he sips his whiskey.
As we both sip our whiskey. So some things take some time.
They do take some time.
Yeah.
When was the first project? And I know we're always searching for the next thing, but when was the first project that you're like, this is it? Not necessarily that you're living on a house on a hill.
Right. Not money wise.
Okay. This is my career. I'm good at this. I know I'm good at this. And all the roads so far lead here. And I want the road to keep going.
It's pretty recent. I mean, back in 2005, I think it started where I was getting gigs, but I was also like editing at the time and doing sound stuff and doing script stuff. And like, so I was doing a lot of stuff, but like, I think once I left the studio system and then, you know, I feel like Justice League was probably one of the first ones. And I've said this in other interviews before, but I think walking into Alan Burnett's office and seeing Batman the Anime Series sells on the wall. And I worked at Warner Brothers Studio Store, and it's like your brain breaks.
Yeah.
Do you remember that spec of animated series? And here I am pitching to Alan Burnett and this. And it's, so that's the moment where like, that's an out of body moment that like your 20-year-old self's going, like it's a dream. Like, it's like you won the, I'm dead, aren't I? Like you look around like I'm fucking dead. Right.
Yeah.
This is a joke. Yeah. And that, I think probably that was one of the big most, obviously Star Wars was another insanity. Oh, yeah. And so it's, And I don't even know if I've gotten to the, oh my God, this is what I want to do forever yet, but it's getting towards that direction.
You're waiting for your first album of your rock band to release, right?
Right. See, you know, man, like I didn't want to have to say that, but
That's the way life is. And not saying this is entirely what you're saying there, but like when I was in radio, the thing that I love more than anything, the thing I won't shut up about, I love radio. I was trying to get out. I wanted to go do comedy. I wanted to go to LA. I get to LA, do comedy. I want to go. I want to screenwrite. I get to start doing some screenwriting.
And sometimes you discover. So you were just trying to figure it out.
That it all comes back to me and a microphone. Where I began 25 years ago.
Also, it's so weird because, but also the climate has changed. I mean, look at Critical Role. We were nerds in a basement, and now that is a thing where people want to watch and be included and part of it. And it's like a sport in a way, and and an inclusion. And I was just talking about that today, where it's fans are going along for the ride with the people on the screen live. I mean, they're as surprised as the people at home.
And for those
that you can't fake that,
I think most people who are listening will understand and know what Critical Role is. But for those, and especially if my mother's listening, Critical Role is a group of voiceover actors. I always hate saying that because they're actors, because it's hard. You've directed VO now, and you've been around VO.
And it's an absolute craft, and they're actors first, and they happen to be super skilled at voiceover acting on top of that.
And it's always been and it's a special trait. Mm-hmm. You doing a silly voice in it, but aside from that, they get together, 4 or 5 years ago now? They're playing D&D. They put it in front of camera. This is, I forget whoever the suggestion came about.
Yeah.
Flash forward. It takes a little time, but flash forward, it's one of the hottest things in the digital media space and in the entertainment space.
Absolutely.
A record-breaking Kickstarter, which you are involved in. That's been announced. You're doing some writing for that.
I am. Yeah. It was pretty amazing. I mean, I met Travis and Laura a long time ago, and then I met everyone thereafter, and also a lot of the same connections in.
Yeah.
And I as they grew, I grew and did all the other shows, and then Star Wars happened, and it's like, okay, then here we are.
So you get behind that movement.
And now I'm running a show for Crunchyroll. And it's not announced yet.
Okay.
And I'm hoping by fall it'll be
announced.
It
works well.
And now I'm like I do voice directing or helping with casting or doing like all the whatever, and it's I'm at that level and I'm running a room.
So, yeah, running a room and finding yourself.
Which is crazy. So now I'm like, now's the time.
Now is the time.
To be capable of stuff.
Let us talk Star Wars a little bit. Now, we're going to get you on Force Center. Yeah.
That old bean.
We are going to get you on Force Center for sure one day soon to go into more detail. But awesome. And that actually, that's how when Matt Key says, do you know who Jennifer Murrow is? And I'm like, why? Yeah, what? Oh, yeah, she tweeted some picture out at Lucasfilm or something.
Yeah.
And I remember some story. That's how we first heard. That's because I'm covering Collegiate Council, Justice League writer Jennifer Murrow's saying she's doing something with Lucasfilm. Well,
which is crazy. It was just like, I didn't, like, you always ask permission. And,
sure.
And like, you're supposed to be in the photo and the whole thing. Like, you can't just take pictures of stuff. But I asked, and I'm pretty sure they said yes. And then it got a lot of attention. They're like, yeah, maybe you should take it.
You had to take it down? I mean, we ran with the story. We were covering the story.
Yeah, but like, I was like, I'll totally take it down. I didn't expect that much interest in it. But
it's
like
Star Wars.
I know, and I didn't understand the
Star Wars news cycle and fervor.
Yes. I mean, I do understand the fervor, but not articles on it. Like, I'm like, oh.
Well, it's that age. You know, Mark Hamill tweets something, and it's 14 articles about how he hates something when I know he loves it, and it's just a weird time.
Had I known, I wouldn't have done that at all, of course. I mean, but I did ask, and so. And
they're probably. Yeah. I think they're, maybe even then, because it's prior, what would that be, 2015 range, 2016?
2016 maybe? Yeah. Summer of 16?
I seem to recall it after Force Awakens when we're still in that new Star Wars is back hype period.
Oh, yeah.
And that was part of it. It was like, well, what's this?
Right.
You know?
And so, so that was a lesson learned in terms of, though it was supposedly okay, it's like you still can't really.
I'm not trying to get you in trouble again, Jen. No. Well, but it's funny because that is my first memory of you not knowing who you were is, oh, she's the one who tweeted.
She's so excited.
She was excited about working with Star Wars. So without, and there might be things you can't say or not feel comfortable saying, there's a veil of secrecy around Lucasfilm at times. Understand that. Mm. The process, though, of getting to write an official Star Wars Lucasfilm property and a wonderful animated series that I love so much. And that was what was also, if you had written something horrible, I would have had a tough time and like, okay. You ruined stuff. That's not me. No.
You would have just smiled through your teeth and been fine.
But I legitimately, and I've written about it. It's in the upcoming book. One of the episodes you wrote. We'll say kids based series. That's a quick way to market it. It's short YouTube based Star Wars digital media.
Right.
But it was canon stories.
Unseen moments
in the corners of the movies. Which we'll get into that too. But how does that even begin to happen?
Your brain breaks. And you get lucky and you happen to be doing other female driven stuff. Like I was doing, you know, Lego DC Superhero Girls at the time. And I, my samples and my, my other writing of my own were all female driven.
And yeah, for the most part, that's what it forced into destiny is.
Yes. And it was, and, you know, in the features and the TV shows and everything, it's, it was mostly about like, you know, the heroines of Star Wars. And you begin that, and you happen to work with Dave Filoni at Nickelodeon when he was on Avatar, and we were together there at the same time. So that's why, and you know, and by the way, someone else might not have been available. I have no idea. Like
it doesn't matter, but yes,
I was in the right place, right time, knew the right person, and there's luck, but you have to be prepared. It's and what I was doing at the time, so it's not just luck. It's a combo.
Preparation is always key.
Exactly.
You don't just stumble into it, and next thing you know, you're writing Star Wars without some skills and reason to be there.
Right. So it was the good. It was the good timing.
So how did you hear about it? Oh, was it just your management team says, "Hey, Star Wars is looking for a Star Wars"?
It was really Dave. It was really Dave. Yeah, absolutely.
The man in the cowboy hat.
Yep, that's the man, and he's brilliant. And I, you know, he's. I remember when this all happened back before Clone Wars, and to see him go from Nickelodeon to that is like awesome, and I'm so happy for him.
That's funny. You know, what's funny. I'm so familiar with him as a Star Wars person.
Yeah,
I've never really tracked his career before that. So he was at Nickelodeon, Avatar, all that kind of stuff.
Avatar,
I mean, just never stopped.
I remember him sitting and doing the directing, like the animatics and looking at stuff. And I mean, there was a reason why they called him back then to do the thing. And
totally.
Yeah. And I'm sure he's told the story a million times, I'm assuming.
Not here.
Not here. So,
Dave, come on down. I sat next to him at the Rebels finale viewing at Disney's the lot.
Oh, we got, how long ago was that?
Whatever the finale was. It was like 2 weeks before the finale aired on TV. Collider Video.
Of Rebels. Oh, okay, Rebels.
We got, and we just happened, me and Perry Nemiroff from Collider were sat next to him.
And he knows you.
He wouldn't know me. No. Unless it's like, me and Christian and the talking heads of Collider that annoy the hell out of all of them.
You're good.
I drunkenly accosted, did Matt Key ever tell you that story?
Which one? What story?
We drunkenly accosted Dave Filoni at San Diego Comic-Con, I want to say 2014 or 2015.
No.
2014.
I've not heard that story.
We were at a party, one of those, the Nerd HQ, one of those Zach Levi parties, whatever, Petco Park, and we're there. And we've got a few tossed back, and I see Dave walking up, and he's, you know, got the cowboy hat on. I don't know who was standing next to him. Someone was next to him, and they're walking. And I said something to Dave, and Key and I are like, let's say something. We're like, Dave Filoni, Dave, how's it feel to write some cool Star Wars better than the prequels? Ha! And he's just like, thanks, God. Thank you. And like his friend's like, laughing, but we're just like, you're the best, man. And he just kept going. And he has no memory of that.
We barely have a memory of it.
I'll tell him the story if I ever get a chance to. But
enough
about Dave, more about Jen Murrow. You get brought in, got it, your samples, they like it. Take me to the moment, Jen. Come on, that's what us nerds want to know. You get the call from the Mouse House. Come on, take me to that moment.
Yeah, God.
You get an email?
There were a couple of them. I think it was a slow burn. It was a slow burn in a way, yeah.
That's even worse because it could still falter. Still fall to the side.
Yeah, so it was like, you know, conversations and meetings and let's do this and let's have a conversation, like, you know, and then slowly you're like, okay, now you're going and
making a deal, up to the ranch,
and then that's when it becomes really real, in my opinion. I mean, that's when you're like, what the hell just happened?
Is that the moment? That's the moment.
I think that's the moment. I mean, I think we were already like talking about stuff beforehand and like doing prelim stuff, but that's the, of course, I mean, that has to be the moment. Also going to the lot and seeing like, In down here in Los Angeles, like seeing R2 and Yoda and like their little office here, and it's like, oh yeah, it's the whole real thing. It's pretty crazy.
Well, that's an interesting insight into the business, though. There isn't necessarily just one call. There's a final you got go picture in a way, but
there's not always that way. Yeah. I think it's when like you're at Ewok Lake and they're like Dave's like, oh yeah, that's where they did the they burned Darth Vader.
That's right. And you're like, it's crazy.
It's like you're. Yeah. It's that out of body that was that Batman out of body situation again, and then later when with the Luke Skywalker thing, I couldn't even talk about that because that was in the second series of Star Wars Forces.
Right. And I think by this time, I think we'd been, either you'd been interviewed with us on Collider or
and it
I
didn't
think
happen yet.
You didn't happen yet.
Nope.
Yeah. You had to sit on that one.
I had to sit on that one. And at that time, I think Jedi, I think it was Leia's dress is the only one that had come out in terms of like Jedi. Although that was Empire Strikes Back. But like that's another out of body. That's like
working, seeing Mark Hamill read your words as Luke Skywalker.
Well, I didn't. Well, you know what? It's about writing for Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah, because that episode is
Dagobah. Yeah.
Right, and I remember you saying something about that. Because he later, they do one in Jedi, the other series, and I don't think you wrote that
yes,
one.
Yes,
right?
Oh, yeah. So then after I had left, yeah, then yeah. Nicole Dubuque, I think Nicole that Nicole had done that one.
Yes.
She's amazing, of course.
She's great, Rebels, too, yeah. But yeah, so yeah, it's right, the Dagobah one, which that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You're going to one of the most iconic sequences in Star Wars,
yeah.
And putting new words to it.
Yeah. And, I mean, of course, Dave had, like, help. That's like a whole
sure.
hand in that, and it's... Oh my God.
Sure.
It's crazy.
But it's your name on it.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's your name there.
No, but it's. And I always was hoping Mark would do the voice.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that ended up happening. Because
he could have not.
You know, easily.
Sure,
could
sure.
Not.
And I mean.
And he's amazing. Well, he's also one of the best voices. He's amazing. So I'm like, this is.
Also happens
like,
to be.
And I think he might have been worried, like, oh, do I sound like my young self? I'm like, yeah. You can do it. And it's.
You
can do anything.
Yeah, I mean, our pal Matt Mercer does his voice in Battlefront 2.
Oh, that's right.
So
yes.
Yeah, they definitely will get other people, but
right.
To get Mark, were you there in the booth that day?
I did not get to go to that. No,
oh,
I don't know where
yeah.
the heck I was. I was not available, but I had met Mark at other stuff.
Yeah,
and a different record, and we talked about it a little bit.
Great.
That's when he was like, "Oh, I hope that turned out okay." That's, and the whole thing.
Jen, that's insane as a Star Wars fan. As someone influenced by Return of the Jedi as a kid.
What I'm saying.
You're
like,
writing
original
words
trilogy
for
is my thing.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's an out-of-body thing.
Yeah.
Like you can't, it's just, there's no words. There's no words.
No words.
There's no words.
Well-earned, but no words.
Yes. I don't know how I got here, knock on wood. That was a knock on wood.
That was a knock on wood.
Yes.
But you, that comes out. Yeah, and that was, it's so funny. It was that celebration. It had been... So you tweet out that picture, but it's kind of in everyone's rearview mirror. You know, you're thinking, we'll hear about it, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was like 9 months earlier.
Yeah, it is that. And then the night before that was all revealed, I was in a car with somebody. I won't say who to protect them. They're like, oh, I heard whatever this new thing coming out is called Forces of Destiny. They register all these trademarks.
It's like at midnight.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean?
No, this was someone, I was in a car with somebody and they're like, yeah, I just heard what it is.
Oh yeah. People look at the trademark stuff.
Yeah.
That's
and they're like, it's called
way.
Forces of Destiny and all stuff. And we were thinking,
what the fuck
is that the title for episode 8? Like, what is it? We don't know. And then he's like, no, it's this series, this animated series. Folks don't know that.
Oh, someone must have knew something.
Oh, they do.
Oh, interesting.
People don't forget. We know sometimes in that web world, we know people who know people. And,
okay.
Whatever we
didn't
were talking
come
about,
from me. I don't know
no Siri
that.
Turned on my phone, so Lucasfilm's trying to listen to me now. but then they rolled it. They said, "Hey, it's a line. They've got a line of figures with it,
and it
focuses on the female characters." And was like, "Oh, that's not what we're expecting, but that's awesome." And that's when it all synced up.
Oh, like,
it's that
that's
picture
the
from
thing.
From that girl tweeting up at Lucasfilm.
That's the thing, that bitch.
No, I was very excited right from the beginning.
It was pretty amazing. It like honestly, one of the biggest memories is being at Celebration.
Yeah.
Up in Dave's suite with everybody, and Sam was there, and that video dropped of what it is,
and
Kathleen Kennedy talking about it, and it's like being there with them
awesome.
At midnight, seeing that was like that was another what the hell is happening?
Well, see
moments.
Now that's
these
the,
are just moments. That you
see, and I, you know what I was doing at the time, studying for Star Wars trivia to defeat Sam,
which you
so
did.
That's why he
that's
didn't
crazy.
Win. He was partying with you guys.
I guess so. Yeah, he was man. I still can't believe that happened, man. That is.
I can't believe it.
That
luck.
Is some.
I know my stuff, but that was luck because he's a machine.
He is. You're both machines.
Yeah.
You're Robo Wars.
Robo Wars,
yes.
Indeed. So Star Wars, and we're going to talk a bit some of the time on Force Center because there's so many questions I have.
Let's do that.
About
let's do the Force. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to do that. Okay. Jennifer and Joseph get in there too because
they do.
Because not just writing for those characters, but you're answering questions. How Leia got her dress is a question I've been asking since I was seven.
And so was I, which is why I pitched that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to.
And you answered it.
Yeah.
And I love the answer.
Oh, that's good. There was different kind of versions of that. But of course you go through like how to the end point. And also they're short, so you have to cut that. But that's for the other podcast.
That's the other podcast.
I'll tell you all about that one, which is an interesting...
I would love to hear that. Yeah. But I'd be risk if I brought you all the way over here and schlepped you out here to Burbank to record, and we don't talk about another thing that is shared between us that we really, really love, and that is the Beatles. You mentioned it already.
What the hell?
I don't know why I didn't know that.
I don't either. Was it because you were at my house?
I was at your house. Yeah, for this was it your? It was your birthday.
It was Christmas. Was it Christmas?
Oh yes, it was your
I had a solstice party.
Your solstice party.
Yeah, yeah.
And I showed up, and you have, again, this amazing, there's like frame pictures of nerd stuff, and there's like a Bill Murray picture, I remember, Ghostbusters, right?
Ghostbusters in my bar.
In your bar, the goth bar, you got weapons laying around. Jen's got weapons in her house. She's got a bow and arrow and swords and stuff. Yeah, and then you kind of really like, oh, you haven't, let me give you the tour.
The tour, yeah.
You have a Back to the Future bathroom. I think I Instagram from it. all this kind of stuff. But then I was like, holy, wait, time out, pause, it's the Beatles thing.
Right, and I had instruments, I think I had mentioned Lefty Bass, and then I showed you my albums.
Yes.
My original, like, white album, original Sgt. Pepper, original vinyl, and it was...
And it's weird because I talk about Star Wars, I talk about Game of Thrones, I talk about pro wrestling, I talk about all these things, baseball, all these things I grew up with. The Beatles was my baseball around the same, but Beatles was the super, super passion. But you know, people don't talk about it as much anymore. And then there's this weird movement I see sometimes, the VAD, they were overrated. And it's like, you might not like their music, but you don't understand what they did to the actual business of music and making music.
Oh yeah.
Things from, they're the first to print lyrics on the album sleeves, all these kind of things that they did. You don't need to like the music, but you need to understand. So I get a little grumpy. I'll get a little, like Paul's grandfather in Hard Day's Night. But, hey, Mystic, can we have our ball back?
You're lucky to be here.
Very clean. So when did this little Italian girl in Long Island, did she connect with the four lovable lads from Liverpool?
Oh, my God. I think I was an Anglophile at heart. Life, I must have been British. There's just no way. Somehow. And I was 11. I was young.
Yeah.
And, I'm trying to go back in time, and I mean, I remember loving the Beach Boys, and I loved stuff from the 40s and 50s. I was a weird kid, and I loved stuff from 20 years earlier.
That's not weird. Yeah.
Right, but like I loved 50s music, and my dad introduced me to that, and I think that's probably where it began from 50s music, because he was doo-wop, and you know, he was 50s teenager.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles happened at 11, and that was the end of it. And like, that was my life. I'll show you the picture of my room. It was crazy. When everyone was listening to like all the other stuff, I was Beatle girl.
And I was
a weirdo.
I was, but I was Beatle guy. Like, I would grow my beard.
How old were you?
So 12.
So it was a 12. Same age, so, like 11 and
12. Yeah, 12. And this is what I always say, what I love about it. And again, if you're listening, you're not a Beatles fan, God bless you. We'll convert you one day. But like Scott Mance, who's been on the show, John Rocha has been on the show, Jason Inman, we all share this. Really love. And again, you know, who doesn't love the Beatles type of thing? It's a joke. You know, Howard Kramer, the comic, had a great joke. You know, you like the Beatles? Great. Do you also like food?
Right.
Like, I get it, but it's powerful when it grabs you, as in any band or music. It grabs you. But it's always, to me, a little different with the Beatles, because you don't just fall into the music. You fall into this rock and roll
everything
story.
Like, when I was a teenager, like, all of it's gone out of my head. It's a bummer. But, like, I knew trivia.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Star, like
same,
I trivia
yeah.
with 40-year-old men would be like, oh my God, how do you know that? And like, I was a kid, and I know like interviewers' names that interviewed like Yoko and John in 1973 and doing like obscure.
In the early to mid 90s, you and I would have been a formidable team at a Beatles pub night.
Right.
A pub trivia night.
And we would have won
that. Behind you there on the shelf, there's that book. It's the white spine one that just is the complete Beatles.
Yeah.
That is every single professional day of the Beatles documented. I used to read it cover to cover.
Oh my God. I have some, I should show you some of my books that I have that are out of print now.
Yeah.
Like I have like photo books that you can't even get anymore.
I love that.
That I lost, and I lost some stuff. I had a flood.
You had a flood recently.
And I lost my Paul McCartney's Flower in the Dirt original, like the tour, because I was there, because I was at 15. I was there in Jersey. And then the Beatlefest of Caucus in New Jersey, 1989, 91, 92, 93. So, like, yeah, I was, like, at Beetlefest in Jersey, like, the
love
whole thing. It was crazy. Yeah.
1987 for me, but 12, my friend Sean Phillips, I've told the story other places, I apologize those who have heard it, my friend Sean Phillips at a slumber party out in a tent, hands me a cassette of Sgt. Pepper. And okay, I had heard before. My mom had bought me a Beatles rarities disc, the one with the German Schlieb Dig, You Know My Name, Look Up the Number, all these things that I was like 10 going, what is this?
And of course, those are like the weird ones. Yeah. I love how they picked.
It was really weird. Yeah. It was like.
That's number nine. Here you go.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Yeah, get into the Beatles. Number nine, We Must Have Let the Night Watchman. Yeah. Then it was when my friend organically just goes, have you heard of these Beatles? I have heard of them. Try this. And
Sgt. Pepper blew your mind.
Yeah. Though, you know, Abbey Road eventually becomes my favorite album. But Is that yours? That's mine.
See,
I like a little more rocking.
Let It Be.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm surprised because, well, number one, I think at Beetlefest they play Let It Be all the time, the documentary. But like, I Got a Feeling is so amazing. And like two of us, you don't like I Got a Feeling?
No. I like, it's close between Let It Be and Abbey Road, my favorite
album.
Okay,
yes. Yeah. And honestly, Rubber Soul is very underrated as well. And Beatles for Sale. I think that's when their transition was. And Revolver, obviously.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that was the cool.
So when you're 11, what is the song, the album, the moment? How do you fall into it?
I think when I was that young, it was probably Meet the Beatles, which was an amazing album. And I have an original of the Meet the Beatles, which is fantastic. And then, of course, we had Hard Day's Night and Help, which is, by the way, any nerd goes to watch Help would enjoy Help because it's a James Bond parody. It's funny and it's 60s. And
I always say it's James Bond and like the first like Naked Gun, early Fairley Brothers type of parody.
Yes,
movie.
They would enjoy it. They would be like, they would get it. I think Hard Day's Night they probably would kind of get pretty bored.
Hard Day's Night
comparatively.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right because they're totally two different. Even though from the distance they might look similar, but
right.
Hard Day's Night is kind of this piece of art in a way. It's just extended, though. I mean, it's got some great funny stuff.
Yes. Oh, and, no, it totally does. I mean, we're
just doing the Paul's grandfather. The lady that stops Lennon in the underneath the hallway in the behind stage, like, oh, you don't look like him at all. That whole sequence.
Oh, that was awesome. That's where the interview. Are you a mod or
I'm a mucka. Yeah. How'd you get here? We just turned left. All that stuff. What do you call your hairstyle? Arthur. But Help is silly.
It's ridiculous. I mean, they shrink and there's a ring and there's like sacrifice and.
Yeah.
And
I always go crazy. Randomly, I'll just tell people like, hey, Beato, you should have fun. No. People are like, what are you talking about? Like,
so 1965 and like, and they'll like walk off like a little jet plane and like, it's so. Mm-hmm. It's all James Bondy stuff and fun, but like it, I don't think that Peter Sellers was probably the closest stuff to that.
That's a great example. Yeah.
Yes. That was probably the closest.
Yeah.
And so I highly recommend it for people who aren't huge Beatles people. They could just be like, oh.
I might try to do a Help or a Hard Day's Night watch along at some point on the Knapsack Files. So you're in like Flynn. Who's your favorite Beatle? Is it McCartney? You're mentioning
Paul.
Him, McCartney.
Paul's my man. Paul, he's fantastic.
It's Paul's grandfather.
He just resonated with, number one, he's cute as hell, but also, and he played left, he was lefty.
You're lefty. Yeah, you're connecting to that. That's fine.
Connecting to that. He also had the most lyrical pop stuff that flowed supernaturally. All the way, George was amazing too. And Ringo, God bless his heart.
I love Ringo. George is my Beatle. But
hey, he had some albums, you know, Ringo had some albums. And so you're John.
No, George. George.
Oh, you're George. And George is
there might have been a part where I was John, it might have been a point where I was Paul, and I ended up settling on George.
So not John, because most people are John.
Most people are John, but it was George. It ended up being George, and but it was his solo stuff. All Things Must Pass is that gets me through a lot. And
and Traveling Wilburys after that.
Yes, and that's
kind of rocked my world.
It absolutely did. Oh my God, I remember sitting in the dugout of my little league team, singing along to like humming Traveling Wilburys alone on the far end of the dugout because no one would go near me.
I was like in high school, they're like, what is wrong with you? But I did find some like-minded girls, which was amazing. And that's, you know.
Really? Yeah.
Which was
that
fantastic.
Difficult to find Beatle girl fans at the time?
I think back, this was long enough ago where they knew who the freaking Beatles were. So I actually had a few and it was interesting. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
it's fun to find your folk.
Yeah, and I was in, and I got to go with some people to the Beatle Fest and stuff, and
I never did
enjoy that stuff.
Where'd
you grow up?
I grew up in Pismo Beach, about 2.5 hours north of here.
Okay.
So
there's probably not tons we had
a,
around.
No, yeah. we had a Beatle cover band come in to a big concert.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I got to interview Louise Harrison, George's sister.
Right, yeah.
She was out for that.
She was at a lot of the Beatle Fest.
Yes.
Out east.
She was sweet. She was sweetheart.
Super sweet, yeah.
I was so nervous. She called in and I had to set up my reel-to-reel at the radio station.
Oh.
Did an hour-plus interview.
Oh, my God.
And my friend Dave, since he passed away.
Oh, my God. You must. Oh.
Big fan. He could do a killer, George. We'd interview her.
You must get be losing your shit.
Yeah, I was so nervous.
Oh, my God.
20 years old. I loaded up the reel wrong. Nothing recorded.
Oh, my so God, I would have.
I died.
Oh, my God.
And we contact her back and go, we are so sorry. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
Mrs. Harrison, I'm so sorry.
Did she say
And she
yes?
said, oh, just give me a little bit and I'll call back again.
Oh.
And she did. About like later in the afternoon, we reset up. Same, gave the same interview. So sweet.
Please don't tell me you did it again.
No. Got it. Okay. We aired it on the radio station. It was good. It was fascinating because George was visiting her family in Ohio when he made his first trip to America.
Oh.
And so she told us all that.
Oh, I didn't even.
Yeah, yeah.
That I don't even.
Yeah, like he had visited her at one point.
Okay.
And during that time, right before everything kind of broke. It's pretty fascinating to get that close.
No, it's so weird, even at that age, although I was a little younger, like when Roy Orbison died,
Remember,
there goes the Traveling Wilburys. Like they were going to tour. Like there was a whole thing that was going to happen. This is death.
And then Del Shannon was going to come in, I believe, to replace Roy.
Oh, is that right?
And then that didn't happen. I think he might have passed away around that time. It was a little curse of the Wilburys.
It was like it's over.
Yeah, like I forget the exact, I think Orbison was like 50 when he died.
Yeah, it wasn't super, I think he was a little older than that, but was he was not young.
Yeah, and I know
he was that old.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I look now, I'm like, I'm close to, you know, getting up there. I could have been a Wilbury.
You totally could have been a Wilbury.
Does anything about the Beatles influence your writing, your storytelling?
I think sense of humor, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because they were so, well, it's because they had that British sense of humor.
Cheeky.
They were super cheeky.
Don't be cheeky.
And that translates to a lot of stuff that so I think humor-wise, kind of. Yeah. Like drama-wise, not necessarily.
It wouldn't,
Musically, absolutely. But,
okay.
But that sense of humor,
Okay. Well, that made me think of something. But yeah, I in high school, when I started video production.
Yeah.
Everything I tried to make was Magical Mystery Tour, which of all the things that should influence your work, you shouldn't choose that one.
Yeah, even I,
That Boxing Day Disaster. I love it.
Maybe
love
Yellow
it.
Submarine, but even Yellow that's Submarine. Terrifying, by the way. The Blue Meanies freak me the fuck out.
Blue Meanies do freak me out.
Okay, because I can't even watch that. And I love them, but I'm like, oh, guys, I love you, but I cannot watch
this. I can't. Everything I wanted to do was weird, experimental.
Okay.
Crazy characters on a mission.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know,
I didn't get that experimental side of them.
I did.
I got the like mid-60s humor.
Humor, yeah. but that's the way to do it. My favorite sequence might have been Lennon eating the spaghetti till he like about explodes, or Lennon's keep.
In
Magic Mystery Tour, Lennon is scooping the spaghetti onto Ringo's grandmother's plate. It's that kind of stuff. So that, I'm glad that didn't influence your work.
It did not.
But the humor did.
Yes, the humor did.
The cheeky
humor.
So
I got the good parts of that. And I have to like, and Nathan Hamill and I were talking a little about that. I was like, I think he had posted something. I was like, oh, you're a Beatles fan?
Yeah.
And he's like, I did the whole tour thing with the fan. I was like, oh my God, that's freaking crazy. I had no idea.
I haven't talked with Nathan about the Beatles because we're too busy talking about Young Guns.
Okay, yeah, that's another thing we have to talk about. Like, what is with freaking Young Guns? And Young Guns 2 specifically?
I mean, both.
Like, what's, I have to ask guys.
I'm sorry.
We have to do this for like 2 minutes.
It's okay. No, I love this. Just love this.
What is the deal?
I don't quite know the deal yet.
I love those movies, by the way. But
God bless you.
Okay.
I'm launching soon, and who knows, maybe we'll, probably won't because of Star Celebration, but I'm launching a short series podcast here on the feed called I Shall Finish the Game, where I interview people just about Young Guns, because I have that many people in my life that this movie affects them, these movies affect them.
Amazing.
I always say this. I love Westerns.
I love Westerns.
But I don't have like a catalog of here's 59 Westerns I've loved.
I
am just, I'm obsessed with the historic time period. including all the realistic stuff about it. Like, yeah. I've read a lot of the real, here's the real story.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the Earps and Billy the Kid and Holiday, all the stuff. But there's just something about the Young Guns. It is the pals thing, runs through. And my best friend, Paul, he's a police officer. We work together in security and everything. And like, there's that kind of brotherly connection during tough times and, and fighting people together and that kind of, I shall finish
that
the game.
Magnificent stuff. I mean, they all,
That kind of that connection that
sure,
way.
Sure.
But that's not it. Then it like, you know, Mark Riley loves it. Nathan, and then I meet Nathan Hamill. It's like, cool. Yeah. I know your dad's Luke. You like Young Guns? Let's talk about that all the time.
That's
like,
because I'm a spaghetti Western person.
See, yeah, and I don't know. That's what person. I mean when I say I love the. I think it's the historical time period, okay. Faults and all, and reality of it all, and I love that time period. I love Tombstone. I love the popcorn movies.
Yeah, and then
movies.
It was like, it was the 90s. It was nice.
Yeah, well, Young Guns is, 89, Young Guns 2, I think 90, 91.
Yes, it was all that
and
early.
Tombstone's, 93, 94 range. Yes. I'm slipping.
Yeah.
But I love those.
Yes.
But
I started with Ennio Morricone, but also everyone's Italian.
Italian, so spaghetti. You would like the spaghetti.
You look at the credits.
And a bowl of pasta.
You're like, wow. And I think it was a joke at Mystery Science Theater once where, like, I think it was Danger Diabolic. They're like, wow, this movie has really nice shoes. And I was like, because it was
very
all
clean.
Italians. But yes. So just more the modern stuff, not the old stuff. Okay.
But that's what's weird about it. So I just connected with, and yeah, I do like Young Guns 2 better than Young Guns 1. I think it's a bit more of a film. The first one has a lot of just heavy metal music of the
80s. Oh, and, right. So it was like,
even though Bon Jovi's in the second one.
I love
But that's the second one. The first one's just the soundtrack, the score is not Western.
And
it is like,
Sylvester
does Young Guns 2.
Okay,
yeah.
So who did one? I forget.
Don't know that. I don't think he did it, but yeah, he did the score. And then you got Bon Jovi releasing his songs. I don't know. It's just, it is silly. It is silly stuff.
When it's on, I keep it on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan.
God bless you, as you should. So I don't know. I don't know if I have the answer.
I can't explain why.
That's why I want to have this podcast series, because I really want to find out. Because it is a thing. When I find a Young Guns fan.
Okay.
It's like the Beatles thing. We find our kind.
Okay.
Mark Ellis is, Mark Riley,
really?
Nathan, others.
Okay, yeah, I am. I'm not going to lie. I am
mm-hmm.
a fan.
You're that?
Yeah.
I'm putting you on the list then.
Okay.
We'll do a roundtable discussion about it.
Yes, I'll probably the lightest of that, but like Westerns is my, like a thing
it's a
for
thing.
Me. I don't know why. It has been and it's and it continues. So anytime there's new Westerns, I'm like, damn, I'm a sucker. Like even like Buster Scruggs, I'm like, oh,
I love
damn,
Buster Scruggs.
Which was fascinating.
Fascinating is a good way to say it. And haunting. Yes. Some of the stories were haunting.
Yes.
Love that.
And so like anytime, like, or like 310 Yuma, like I'm like, oh God damn it. Don't give me a Western because I will see it no matter what.
I've never seen the original, but I love the remake.
Yeah.
I think the remake's underrated in terms of Westerns. Ben Foster.
And that's, I think, Jennifer...
Christian Bale. What's
that? Who was Jennifer Hudson in that one? No. Was she? No.
Mm-mm.
She was in something else that was...
I forget.
No, I forget which it was.
I forget.
But anyway, the point is Westerns.
You like Westerns.
Yes, I do.
What is it? Can you answer that? How does that influence your writing?
I wonder... Well, cinematically, musically, I mean, my God, it was amazing. It's in terms of drama, it's long pauses, it's... shots and honestly in animation you do that a lot, which is thinking visually and cinematically and like boarding you think in that way a little bit more. I'm sure live action does, but it like people are like, what's the biggest difference between the two? And I think it is about thinking visually, and I think Westerns, I mean, are so, it depends on the Western, of course, by the way, but there's lot of amazing epic stuff, and there's a lot of wides, and it's just there's something about the music and
it is that feeling so of a mythical wide open space.
Yeah, it's just something about it, man. I can breathe better.
It's so weird because it's like even you go like Logan, you know, it's like a superhero Western. I don't know specifically what that means, but I know you're right. The concept of an Obi-Wan movie or TV series, right?
Yeah.
Obi-Wan in the desert. It's like a Star Wars Western.
Right.
I don't know what that means specifically, but I totally agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So no, I am like, I don't know why, I don't know what it is. I don't know how much it affects me other than like wide and cinematic. Because there's not a lot of quippiness in Westerns pretty much 90% of the time.
Which might
unless
be-
it's like, you know,
well,
Val
but
it,
yeah, Val Kilmer, but Young Guns, but even then, it's not. It's you know, there's not there's a lot of humor in Young Guns and Young Guns 2, totally. But it's not.
Also, they had like delivered. All the cutest guys of the freaking like early 90s. You're like, oh, let's put like the Brat Pack in there. It's not.
That's true. You know, Emilio's going to jump out of that bathtub. You're going to see those honestly, hot buns.
Even, you know, before Mel Gibson went south, Maverick was fantastic.
Yeah.
Maverick was a great.
Jodie Foster. Yeah,
Jodie
absolutely.
Foster was fantastic. So yeah. I love
that's interesting.
A lot. Big Maverick.
Beatles, Star Wars, Westerns, Italian. Oh, by the way, you cook like no one's business.
Oh,
Jen, you're the perfect
you.
Woman.
I
you're the
try.
Perfect person, perfect writer. You're the best.
Just announce it, you know, just yeah. in case. You know, just have my phone number handy for people. Here's
Jen throws this party at her house, at her amazing nerd house. And we show up. I show up with Joseph Scrimshaw, my Force Center partner. I'll tell the story. We show up, and there's some people we know. And that's the thing. You're one of those people. Almost everyone knows you in our circle. Like, it's like, how do you know Jen? How do you know Jen?
That's,
wow.
That's so funny.
It's
everyone
pretty
says
crazy.
That. Yes.
You know, I've been surprised. Your birthday party was at Scum and Villainy. That
yes.
was, that's why I was, that was, so yeah, you yes. show up and it's like, hey, what are you doing here? Well, I'm here for a party. I am too. What party? We all point to you. Like, oh, how do you know Jen?
That's kind of awesome. Even Will was like, I haven't seen that person in 20
right.
years. They're like,
that's
I'm
crazy.
Like, and it was, he had a good
so we walked to your house and, It's your party, so I understand you're hosting, and it wasn't your birthday, it was the solstice event.
Yeah.
Going to the kitchen, and another person you know, my friend David Fickus.
Oh, which is crazy.
Crazy.
I had no
idea. The whole nother circle.
Yes.
You know David and Bryce
circle.
From Drama 3-4.
Yeah.
Old Schmoes fans will know those names. And we walk in the kitchen, do you need any help? And you're like, oh, and you're always so nice. I know. Maybe we can. And so we start taking. You had literally cooked a feast for 50 people by yourself, Jen.
Yeah, I know. I'm crazy.
And it was restaurant quality.
Oh, thank you.
When did
you.
That? Did that just the Italian kicks in?
That's the one thing. Like growing up, like we had no money, but we did know how to throw parties and cook in bulk.
Manja, manja.
And we had like with the, like I had a very small Italian family in terms of like my mom and my sister, but like in terms of the extended, it was like 16 of us or 17 of us and the cousins and stuff. So like you just knew how to do that. And those were the good memories I had that I kept. And I've had theme parties for years.
Yeah.
Like, back in the, like when I was a teenager, I had like Star Wars theme parties, but like even when I came here, I'd have Halloween. Like right. I'm known for the parties and I'm very, very proud of that. And I'm very happy about that. But like, it's
makes
getting
sense.
Harder to cook. It's getting harder and harder to cook. Like I made Yorkshire puddings like from scratch.
I mean,
I wish
I'd taken, I'm not a take a picture of food person, but I wish I had because it was impressive.
Oh, thank you.
As we start to wrap up here, Jen, though, I got to ask this big question, dream projects, counting ones you're already working on. Or might be working on. What do you think in your soul I still need to do? What does Jennifer Morrow need to add to her IMDb list and her legacy? What do you want to do?
Star Trek. I'm a huge, 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 huge Star Trek person.
What? You didn't even hesitate.
No, yes, Star Trek is definitely up there. I would love Buffy again in some way would be fantastic.
Okay.
Xena would be fantastic.
There you go.
The Mascara would be fantastic.
Wow.
In TV, that would be.
Yeah.
Time
yeah.
Bandits is happening. I would have said Time Bandits, but that's already happening right now. So
okay.
Unfortunately, that's taken, although, yeah, that would have been a nice thing. But I'm like, that's just off the top of my head. Back to the Future would be amazing. That should never happen. Leave it alone.
Right,
don't
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Do not touch it.
That's so dangerous.
But like, if it ever did, I'd be like,
you
want to walk away, back.
I got this.
That's like a thing.
But
Star Trek, yeah, big, you know, whether it be, you know, no, of course they're doing all of this.
Yeah,
now,
there's
so,
a lot of it.
So yeah,
opportunity.
I mean, those are really like, also, if they ever do new Golden Girls, everyone back the fuck up. That's mine. Or Three's Company. But yeah, like,
a rebooted Three's Company in a way would be interesting too.
I don't even know how the hell they do it at this.
Golden Girls would be interesting because if you took the same like characters in the same ages, they would look drastically different now.
Super drastically different
like,
now.
Here's Jennifer Tilly approaching 60. She's
she looks
not 60 looking.
She's not. It's a whole other. They'd have to be like 80.
But, 80.
Yeah. So let's
Goldener Girls.
Goldener Girls.
Okay.
But that's, yeah, let's hope.
I love it. But Star Trek, let's get Jen some Star Trek.
Yes, please. That's great.
Jen, this is a lot of fun.
Thanks.
And love hearing a little bit more things I didn't know, things I did know, but diving in. And yeah, I would, each and every one of the things we discussed, I could probably do an hour-long show.
Yes. We could just chat and drink bourbon all day.
Absolutely. Talking to Beatles, Star Wars, Young Guns and Beyond, and food. That's my other favorite thing. But thank you so much. I want people to follow you so they can tell you how much they love this interview, look up to you, and love your work, because I know there's some fans out there. Forces of Destiny specifically, obviously going to bring a lot of eyes to it, but they loved your work. So where can they follow you?
So on Twitter, I think it's Jennifer Muro. I'm pretty darn sure it is. Instagram is Official Jennifer Muro, which is hysterical because my friend TJ Fixman, who's an amazing screenwriter, he makes fun of me and calls me Official Jennifer Muro every time he sees me. And it's amazing and I love it and I hope he never stops.
Yeah.
And so those are the two main places. And so really on Twitter, it's Jennifer Muro, at Jennifer Muro.
And I say Muro like a West Coast person.
Muro is correct. Like, and Muro is like just a Long Island accent.
I was going to say,
because it's M-U-R-O.
Right.
So it's Muro. I mean, it's Muro.
Muro. Well, that's
exactly. But that's just obnoxious.
I'm Knapsack, but old school, across the, back over in Circassia, Circassian lands, it's Knapsack. So I don't go around saying Knapsack.
Right.
It's Knapsack.
Knapsack,
Not Knapsack.
Right.
Knapsack. As I got all through high school and junior high.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Oh, of course.
Okay. And people hear Muro and they're like, M-I-R-O? And I'm like,
Yeah.
Because it's the accent, Muro. Like when I was a kid, I sounded like that. So yes, M-U-R-O.
Follow Jennifer. Call her Official, because she is.
On Instagram, and then Twitter's just Jennifer.
Absolutely. Let her know. She's got a lot of cool things coming up there, especially if you're a Critical Role fan. Stay tuned for some of the amazing things coming down there. And hopefully soon we'll be able to talk about maybe some stuff cool. All right?
Yes, I would like that.
It'll be a lot of fun. Before we get out of here, I got to thank all my Patreon supporters at patreon.com/KenKnapsack. Not the Knapsack Files anymore. It is patreon.com/KenKnapsack, including my executive producer tier supporters, David Hamm. It's DJ Snacks to you and me, Thomas Risley, my friend Lee the Logan X, Matthew Simon Bador, my Fortnite coach on Twitch, Matthew Maroney, Matt Thompson, Tamor and Abdul, Nikki Baldwin, Donald Long, and Nathan Ovendale. If you joined in the time that since I recorded this episode, I will add your name later. Don't forget, my book, Why We Love Star Wars, is out now, available for pre-order on Amazon. You've heard of Amazon and a lot of other things where you can buy books. I will get all the proper information once I know them, because at the time of this episode, I haven't had my official marketing call. All right. So that is it. Jen, thank you so much again. We'll do it again soon. Talking more things nerdy and food and D&D and all of it. Thank you all out there in the Knapsack Files land. We'll see you.